Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, Robert Knott will be with us, as he always is on Fridays, speaking of the arts. Right now, I am honored and delighted to welcome award-winning journalists Mohammed Omer and Dar Jamail. They are co-recipients of the Martha Gellhorn Prize, Dar Jamail for his work as an unembedded journalist in Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria, and Mohammed Omer for his dispatches from Gaza. Mohammed was honored as the voice of the voiceless, whose reporting constituted a humane record of the injustice imposed on a community forgotten by much of the world. Both are independent journalists whose work has appeared in many international media outlets and in many languages. And tonight, as those of you who are listening to this radio just a moment ago probably heard, they will be at the Unitarian Congregation on West Barcelona Road in Santa Fe. Mohammed Omer will give a presentation titled Welcome to Hell, Life Under Siege in Gaza, followed by a conversation with Dar Jamail. The event is sponsored by Another Jewish Voice of Santa Fe and the Middle East Peace and Justice Alliance. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So, Mohammed, you grew up in a refugee camp in Rafah. What was your childhood like?
Well, I grew up in the Rafah refugee camp, the southern part of the Gaza Strip. I had to start my life basically working at the age of six because my father was in Israeli prison, so I had to start working in this place, and it was one of the most difficult periods in my life because I was searching for a job, and I found it very difficult at the age of six to work for any factory or even collecting garbage in the road or anything that I can feed my brothers and sister and mother. It was very difficult childhood where I started to divide between a school and working in a school bag factory in the southern part of Rafah refugee camp.
And why was your father in prison?
Well, my father was in prison for 11 years. We never know what is the reason for that. He was working for an Israeli employer and he did not get his payment for a number of months. After that, he was accused carrying a knife against the owner of the place where he's working, and after that he was taken to prison. He was released. Unfortunately, my father is not in the best health at this stage. He was tortured and he have had very difficult times at the prison inside Israel. But now he is with my family back in Gaza.
Your family has suffered just unbelievably. Your brother was killed, your 17-year-old brother on the way to school, killed by an Israeli snipers. Your house was bulldozed. Your mother was not given a chance to leave the house and was severely injured. Was your family targeted in particular?
Not really. I don't think so. This is something we were living in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. As far as for demolishing our house, it was in the southern part of Gaza Strip on the border with Egypt. Like any house, hundreds of houses have been demolished in order to give a room for the wall which Israel started building in 2002, 2003, and 2004. They have demolished a large number of houses. Among them is our house in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. The same thing with my brothers who were living literally in the front of one of the Israeli stations, military, where they go to school every day and they were harassed. One of my brothers who was killed, Hossam, 17 years old, and one of our neighbors who's trying to evacuate his body, she was shot. I'm going to talk in more details about that tonight. And there is also other number of issues as well related to the suffering of the family. Some of my other brothers, they were injured on the border of Gaza in the southern part of the Gaza Strip where we live.
I think it's very important to talk about all of this in humanitarian terms as well as in political terms. The suffering that you and your fellow Palestinians are going through is not only deprivation of food, water, livelihood, but also just the psychological effects of living in a world where you do not have control over your own lives.
Well, just a few hours ago, I talked to my mother, and I was speaking to her. I just wanted to make sure that they have got water. Unfortunately, today is the fifth day they don't have water. She's saying, well, we don't know how are we going to survive tomorrow morning because we don't have water to wash the dishes, water for drinking, and the man who's selling water in the neighborhood is not coming for the third day. So there is a growing concern about the humanitarian situations. Every day she's, like anyone else in Gaza, thinking, how are we going to survive tomorrow? How are we going to feed our families tomorrow? Are we going to have cooking gas tomorrow to come through the borders? Are we going to have medical supplies enough and sufficient in the United Nations clinics and the governmental hospitals in Gaza? There is a growing concern about that. And with my family, the other example here, my mother is telling me that for the third day, we have no electricity. It comes 2 or 3 hours per day. Sometimes it doesn't come at all. And this makes the whole thing just waiting and waiting. And every person is just fed up with the hail situations and how it's going to affect their lives. In addition to that, Gaza Strip is living with the rumors. And as you said, the psychological part of it is extremely difficult. Some of my brothers, he believes that we are just waiting. We're going to die. We don't know when. It might be now, might be in an hour, might be in a week. There is F-16 missiles are dropping leaflets on the houses of the people, telling them to evacuate their houses. And we don't know if this is going to be bombed now or tomorrow. All the people are living just on horror. And all of them are just expecting the bombing of the houses and the targeting of civilians. And it's still the last operation, Operation Cast Lead, when Israel killed 1,400 Palestinians and 13 Israelis killed in the same period of 3 weeks. This was one of the most difficult parts for the Gaza Strip. If you can see in Gaza, I met with some of the people afterwards and I talked to some on the phone, and all of them fear that the bombing will continue again.
I'd like to just add for a little context, because so many people in the United States are so misinformed about what's happening in Gaza and why. And just for a little context, I want to read just two quotes. One, it's a quote that really sums up Israeli policy for Gaza. In 2006, Dov Weisglass, an advisor to the then Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, said, quote, "The idea is to put the Palestinians on a diet, but not to make them die of hunger." And then another quote I'd like to read comes from the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights, Dr. Richard Falk. He said during the Israeli massacres in Gaza last year that, quote, "Israel deliberately created a humanitarian situation that would be a direct provocation for violence coming from Gaza," meaning rocket attacks, "so that Israel could use these attacks as a way to suspend diplomacy and justify attacking Gaza on a massive and highly lethal scale." And that happened last year, of course, in the overt siege, but now we have a less overt siege, not certainly to the people of Gaza, but it doesn't make headlines when basically you imprison 1.5 million people, you severely limit whatever comes in and out, particularly food and medical supplies, and then every once in a while, whenever you feel like it, you fly over some American-made F-16s and drop some bombs on them.
And this thing that you mentioned, Mohammed, of leafleting, you drop leaflets. Imagine being here in Santa Fe at the Santa Fe Baking Company. They're dropping leaflets from airplanes or helicopters saying, "We're going to bomb you soon." This is a very densely populated place where people have very few resources and nowhere really to go.
I really do not want to imagine it for Santa Fe people, because I believe Santa Fe people are quite beautiful people and nice people, and they deserve much better than this. It's terrible that we have to go through this, and it is a disaster that the world is still allowing it to happen. It's going on and on for a long, long time. People are receiving phone calls and their telephones from the Israeli army, and this is what I'm going to talk about tonight. Telling you, evacuate your house, we're going to bomb it now. You don't know, is it going to be a bomb by F-16 missile, bulldozer, crushing your house, or are they going to put explosive devices under the ground? You never know how you will be able to survive the next day. It's just worry and concern every day.
And fear. I mean, it's terror. When people talk about terror, that's living in a state of terror. I want to get back to your life. You, despite all the hardships that you and your family have gone through, you studied at the Islamic University in Gaza. You earned degrees in literature and English. You became a journalist. What has your journalistic career been like? What challenges and successes have you had in getting the stories of Palestinian people told?
Well, at the beginning, when I started to take photos in the southern part of the Gaza Strip, I was 17 years old. Today I'm 25. One of the most striking things that no news agency or journalist would believe what I'm telling them. I'm calling them, tell them houses are being demolished in the front of my eyes. I'm in the phone now. There are bulldozers here demolishing houses. Tanks shooting at the children. I can see a house of a woman crushed and the woman is still inside for sure. It was very difficult because the media was not based in the Gaza Strip. Most of it was based in Amman, in Cairo, in Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, or even in European countries. It was very difficult for me to start. Therefore, I started the first way I started after I met with American lady, she called Beverly, and I started by creating something called a newsletter for her only. They're bombing us, they're shelling us. They're bombing us, they're shelling us. That's what I said in my first email. She sent it on to her friends. Her friends sent it to friends. Friends sent it to friends. I got at the end of a week hundreds of emails from people who are concerned, especially in the United States. And then it grows from the United States to Sweden, to Norway, to Denmark, to Germany, to Great Britain, to the Netherlands, to France, and to many other countries who started to pick up my stories. I started my blog, Rafa Today, telling the stories of Gaza, taking photos. I've started as a witness for this. I have no interest, to be honest, in journalism at that time. Don't take that as a complaint. It was my dream when I was at the age of 6 years old to become a translator for the International Red Cross. And there is a reason for that. The reason for that is because one day there was a delegation from Canada who were coming to our house, which was in a terrible shape, almost collapsing in our heads. And one of them, the delegations that came to Gaza, all the times they're coming to collect donation to build houses for the others. My mother got tired of this, and she said to them, we were at the age of 6 years old, she said to the engineer, Ayman, well, sir, when are we going to have our own safe shelter? He said, well, your house demonstrates the misery of the houses in Gaza. So we will keep it as the last one, because this is the way to invite the donors. I tried with my simple English to communicate with what I learned in the school, to communicate with the Canadian man, but then I found the translator is putting his hand right in my mouth and telling me, shh, 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 and to keep it quiet. And I say, well, I want to talk. The lady wanted to listen to me. It was House of Commons member from Canada, and they were all of them coming to listen to us, and this man is telling me, shh, shh. At this moment, I decided I want to be a translator. I want to learn English language, and I want to communicate the message to the world. But afterwards, my message has changed. When I saw the destruction and demolishing of houses when I was at the age of 17, when I saw people are killed inside their houses, what shocks me is to go inside the neighborhoods next to us, the people who are not aware about the bombing of the house. I go to my school and then I tell my classmates and I say, are you sure this is not American movie? And I say, no, it is. They tell me, well, take us there. I start to take them there and show them. I start to think to myself, if those who are living in Rafah, they don't know the destruction of houses and the injustice caused in the borderline and Block O area where it started in my area, what about those who are in Khan Yunis, in Gaza City, in West Bank, in Jerusalem, in Ramallah? What about those who are in Israel? What about those who are in the Arab world? What about the rest of the world? They have no clue. Therefore, I started to take photos and to document all these images by putting them on my website, Rafah Today, where I started, because I got huge numbers of emails through the newsletters. And from there, I got requests from newspapers in different countries, that includes Norway, Morgenbladet in Norway, Dagens Nyheter in Sweden, after the blood of Norway and new statesmen in England, the Independent, and many other, the Washington Report in Middle East Affairs in the U.S., and many other newspapers and magazines who started to pick me up from the blog and start to get me into the media.
It's very important, I think, to talk about the crucial importance of people seeing the images. I mean, Dar, we've talked with you on this show several times before, and the lack of images of people suffering during the U.S. invasion of Iraq and the occupation of Iraq is something that really deeply affected U.S. public opinion. People did not know that children were having their limbs blown off and so on and being killed, and likewise in Palestine. Have you had success in not only through your blog but also through other media outlets, Mohammed, in getting these images out to the world?
It depends what type of images. I can tell you there are many medias. The mainstream media in the U.S., they have certain agendas, and I can tell you some of the newspapers, they have no interest to publish photos. You know, I send them photos of people who are injured and killed in their classrooms, and then I get an answer back, oh no, this is too much for Americans to see. We cannot really show that. This is the censorship that it kills me inside, where they're trying to block the image, they're trying not to show it. But I'm glad that today we have Twitter, we have Facebook, we have all those people, we have networks that are able to see within a few minutes after the strike a few days ago that hit one of the cheese factories in the Gaza Strip. Immediately, everybody on the surroundings in Facebook who's connected to the issue of Palestine is aware of the case. This is something that is a challenge to the mainstream media. It's a challenge to Fox News. It's a challenge to CNN. As I mentioned yesterday on Amy Goodman's show, it made me sick to my stomach to see how Fox News is covering the news in such a very superficial way that is not telling the real suffering of the people and just going on and on and on about stories that, in my view as a journalist, does not make sense to even talk about.
We're talking to Mohammed Omer and Dar Jamail, award-winning journalists. I think it's just deeply ironic that any press outlet should say that this image is too tough for Americans to watch, considering all the incredibly bloody, gory, violent movies that we watch without batting an eye on TV, and their children are allowed to watch. The two of you jointly received the Martha Gellhorn Prize 2008, and Mohammed, when you were on your way home from London, you were detained by Israeli security forces. You were humiliated, tortured, as you mentioned on Democracy Now! Yesterday. They had ways of hurting you that would have the maximum amount of damage to your body, but the minimum amount of visible signs that you had been hurt. There were people waiting for you from the Netherlands. You'd achieved international recognition, yet you had no, all of these things afforded you no protection.
And this is what makes me sad. Even following the attack, I was under the Dutch escort, basically. They were the only country who were able to influence the Israeli policy to get me out of Gaza. Israel has officially refused to allow me get out of Gaza to receive the prize. They told me that Martha Gellhorn, you are not going to get out to receive it. It was the Netherlands who managed to get me outside of Gaza Strip under Dutch escort. And I was attacked. And what makes me even more sad, after I was attacked and kicked by the Israeli soldiers and security personnel at El Limbe Bridge between Jordan and West Bank, what was really tragic is that I spent 3 months waiting to receive medical treatment. I have got people who are writing on my behalf. It was Noam Chomsky, John Pelger, President Carter, and Norman Finkelstein, a lot of international figures who wrote letters. And they didn't succeed to get me out in 3 months. I sat one day and I'm like, what about those who have no one to write letters for them? The answer is that they die. And it is still going on today. I wrote an article in the Washington Report in Middle East Affairs where you can see shortages of passports. There is no ink in the Gaza Strip for Palestinians to travel. There is no passport of papers for Palestinians to be allowed. And even if there are passports and your passport is valid, you're not allowed to leave the Gaza Strip. It is very restricted movement of from the Gaza Strip, very limited number of people who are getting out, and most of those students who were given scholarships to study in the U.S. and Europe and other countries, they are not allowed to leave.
I think that what a lot of Americans need to understand about what's happening in Gaza today is that it's many people here are familiar with the U.S.-backed, U.N.-installed sanctions against Iraq from 1991 to 2003 that even Clinton's Secretary of State Madeleine Albright admitted killed 500,000 Iraqi children, saying that the price was worth it to contain Saddam Hussein. And that kind of cavalier attitude is rampant, where Palestinians have been so dehumanized by the corporate media as well as by the Israeli governments. I mean, there's many really horrible quotes from them. I'll talk about more of those tonight, but one more recently from Israeli Foreign Minister Zippy Livni in the wake of the Israeli attacks on Gaza in January of 2009, when she was asked how she felt about these attacks, she said, quote, at peace. In that kind of attitude, when we hear from Mohammed how severe, how extreme the situation is, and this is just Mohammed's experience, we have to keep in mind that there's approximately 1.5 million people in Gaza, one of the most densely populated areas on the planet. And
each of them have a different story.
Every one of them has a story. We could sit here for years hearing these horrific stories, and it's so shocking to people because they have no idea what's going on. Palestinians are painted as terrorists and always in the wrong, et cetera, when in reality it's the Israeli government that's been enforcing this horrific policy against people, causing one of the biggest humanitarian crises on the planet today.
Mohammed, tell us some more. You were talking a moment ago about how your mother is now, today, as we're sitting here drinking coffee in the Santa Fe Baking Company, your mother is at home without water for the fifth day in a row. Tell us some of the other ways in which Palestinians' lives are hindered by not having the basic resources and abilities to conduct their daily lives.
Well, it affects most of the Gaza children are traumatized. They have post-traumatic stress disorder. That's the psychological part of it. I mean, even psychologists in Gaza, a doctor is telling me, we need psychological support, he said to me. And that affected many of the kids that who have now anemia in their blood. And there are lots of diseases that are starting to look at the children who are having malnutrition. There is a very growing concern in the Gaza Strip. At Shifa Hospital, there is an increasing number of mothers who come to give birth, and most of the children who are born, or the babies, they are born with incomplete bodies. That's a birth deficit which you find extremely of a great concern for the Palestinians on the ground, because they don't know what's going to happen. It was a few weeks ago, a mother who gave birth, and she was screaming when she saw the child, because they were not able to identify if he or she is a boy or a girl. They don't know if this is this as a result of the chemicals that Israel used, or is this something that is the situation as it is now. There are so many things that are going on, and the coming generation is definitely going to suffer as a result of all these shortages. And take apart also from this the psychological side of it, that, you know, everybody is just believing that this is the way how we are living. I think in this situation, the alternative to Hamas is much, much, much more dangerous than Al-Qaeda. There are new generations. By putting them in these walls and shutting them down, you teach them to hate. You don't give them the chance to connect with the world. I'll give you an example here. The last week before I left Gaza, I went to shave. And there was a guy, I went to shave and I said, Allah, the guy where I'm shaving, and said, I want to shave today. And then he said to me, oh no, not anymore. Sorry, not anymore. What do you mean? Said to me, well, it was a group here who said to me, we are not going to allow any young men to shave. But he said, I'm going to do it for you, but I have to shut the door so nobody sees that. And you know, I said, well, that's not a crime. I'm just coming here to shave. So I got inside. About when he was about to finish, he opened the door, and then one of those kids, about 22, 23, 24, something like that, he came and he has a beard. You know what? This young man is asking me, why are you shaving? I answered him, why do we need to look all the same? He didn't like my answer. I wanted to start a dialogue with him. I really wanted to do it, and I told him I'm going to interview you if you don't mind. What makes a young man like that grow like this radical? I asked the guys at the barbershop, who's this guy? They say, well, he was one of the most liberal in the city. One of those who just not traditional, not Islamist, or not anything. He lost his brothers. He had lost his mother. Some of his friends. I asked him one question. If you were given 1 minute at the gate of a press conference, Madame Secretary Condoleezza Rice is getting out of her press conference and going straight to her car. It's one walking minute and you have to say something to her. What would you say? He paused for a moment and he said to me, I am going to make sure that they collect her flesh from every corner of the road. I was shocked when I heard this. What is that? Where is this hatred coming from? He said, well, why should she live and my mother die? She's the one who's funding this war. Why my brothers should be killed and those people are living? It's either we all live together or die together. This concern is growing among young people. Putting the young Palestinians in between walls and shutting the roads and making life impossible is making things really difficult. The coming generations are going to suffer. There is a growing hatred that the world have to look at now. There is a need to look at now to end the siege on Gaza and to open the borders to liberate the minds of the people inside, because everybody think that the whole rest of the world is under siege. And this is the way how it should be.
Mohammed Omar is an award-winning journalist. He and Dar Jamail, who has been sitting here very quietly, are co-recipients of the Martha Gellhorn Prize of 2008. And the two of them together will be at the Unitarian Congregation on West Barcelona Road in Santa Fe tonight. Mohammed will be giving a presentation called Welcome to Hell, Life Under Siege in Gaza. Then the two of them will have a conversation afterwards. The event is sponsored by another Jewish Voice of Santa Fe and the Middle East Peace and Justice Alliance. If you want to read more of Mohammed's writing and see his images, you can go to rafahtoday.org, R-A-F-A-H, today.org. And to go to Dar's website, it's dar.org, D-A-H-R. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlotte. Thank you.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the education reporter for the New Mexican, the Santa Fe New Mexican, and he is also with the Pasa Tiempo Friday Arts Magazine in that wonderful daily paper. Welcome, Robert.
I love Paris in the summer. How you doing?
Hey, good. We just had a wonderful interview with Mohammed and Dar, mostly with Mohammed, talking about what's going
tonight,
on in
Life Under Siege
in Palestine. He's doing an event tonight at 6:30.
Nice job. United Congregation on Barcelona Road, right?
Yeah, the Unitarian Congregation.
Unitarian, sorry, United. And I'm singing April songs because Paris songs because April in Paris is happening. Total contradiction of what we were just talking about, but our buddies Dadu Romanowski,
yes,
and Charles Tishner
and
doing
Charles
the
Tishner.
Annual tribute to Paris, the songs of Paris, the pastries of Paris, and the Paris sites. This opens at 4 o'clock Sunday. Plays for three Sundays in a row at 4 o'clock at Venezia. I haven't seen the show in about 3 years. Maybe I'll try to get over there. You got to pay cash or check only at the door. Here's a phone number, 982-9966. And again, it's at Venezia, April in Paris. And Michael Wade Simpson wrote a nice preview piece on it in today's Pasatiempo. If you want to know anything about the Harvey houses, what do you know?
Ah, yes. Well, I just read this wonderful book called Appetite for America by Stephen Fried. We had him on the air yesterday about Fred Harvey and the Harvey houses and the Harvey Empire, which continued long past Fred Harvey's death.
That's right.
And he will be speaking. Tell us the exact.
4 p.m. Sunday, Stephen Fried at the New Mexico History Museum on Lincoln Avenue, 476-5200. There's also at 6 o'clock a Harvey House-style dinner at La Fonda.
Which was itself a Harvey House.
That's right. And it's going to include, among other things, La Fonda pudding. You got to pay to get in. We don't mention prices on KSFR. You can pay for the lecture. You can pay for lecture and dinner. You can get a sponsorship ticket. Call this phone number, 982-9542. Check out museumfoundation.org or read Rob DeWalt's excellent piece on the Harvey House franchise and great photos from the Palace of the Governor's photo archives in Plaza Tampa today, page 28. Also, Fray Angelico Chavez, mm-hmm. It's his birthday tomorrow.
Yes.
He would have been 100. A full day of events at the New Mexico History Museum. This is not just an effort to promote the New Mexico History Museum, which, by the way, I really love. But nonetheless, this is going to be a great all-day, meaning like 10 o'clock to roughly 4 o'clock event. It's free, which is great. Francis Levine, director of New Mexico History, will do a welcome at 10 o'clock. There's going to be readings by Jimmy Santiago Baca. There's going to be Nazario Garcia, a wonderful man, a wonderful storyteller, wonderful writer. We'll be giving an 11 o'clock lecture on humor in Fray Angelico's stories.
A lecture on humor.
In his stories, yes. There's also, they're going to be looking at him as a poet, as a historian, as a priest. So it's a great all-day event. Head on down there, 476-5200. If you don't know where the New Mexico History Museum is, it's at 120 Washington Avenue. Again, this is Saturday all day. It's a great museum. It's a great museum to take people to, and I seem to recall on Sundays it's free for New Mexicans.
Santa Fe Community College Visual Arts Gallery is having a reception. Yesterday, but they are having a show that called Photosynthesis, which goes on till almost the end of April. It goes on through the 26th of April, and it's a showcase and exhibit by the School of Arts and Design at the Santa Fe Community College. The professors of art at the Santa Fe Community College are incredibly talented. I happened to be at KSFR the other day, and I stopped by the Visual Arts Gallery, and there's some really great stuff there. And then the student work lining the halls is just fantastic.
Great. I love that little gallery. I haven't been out there in over a month, but I do always stop by and look at the art there, so I'm glad you said that. Swing on by, and it's free. It's out on Richards Avenue. Michael Kaiser is the author of The Art of the Turnaround, Creating and Maintaining Healthy Arts Organizations. He has a new book coming out in September called 50 Questions Every Arts Board Should Ask. He is renowned around the country for, frankly, saving, quote-unquote, near-dead arts groups, including the Kansas City Ballet, Alvin Alley American Dance Theater, American Ballet Theater, and over in England, the Royal Opera House in London. These are like, they had $5, $10, $15, $20 million deficits. He managed to turn them around. I'm probably exaggerating the deficits now that I think about it. He's going to be coming here Tuesday morning, a public free speech at the Steering Hall at Santa Fe Opera, 8:30 Tuesday, Arts in Crisis. I have a Q&A with him in today's Pasta. Take a look. Go see the event. I'm actually going to attend it and then write about it for the daily paper.
Excellent. Something that probably many of us might not know about is the White Sands International Film Festival.
Da,
so
da, da.
If you want to take a little drive southwards to White Sands, in Las Cruces,
we're going to White
Thursday
Sands.
Through Sunday, April 15th to 18th, it was brought to my attention because the filmmaker of a wonderful film that was at the Santa Fe Film Festival a couple of years ago called M. E.M. Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember Emily? M. That was about 2 years ago.
Yeah, that was a fantastic film. It was one of those films that can only be made by independent filmmakers. It would never get through the Hollywood film process. It was so moving to me that I've been thinking about it ever since. I still like draw on that movie cycle. And it's so anyway, White Sands Film Festival, or for those of us who live further south.
Excellent. I got to mention Dead Man's Cell Phone. Sarah Rule's play still running at Santa Fe Playhouse, 8 o'clock tonight. 8 o'clock Saturday, 2 o'clock Sunday, Thursday night as well. I believe Thursdays are pay what you wish. Playhouse is at 142 East DeVargas Street, 988-4262, directed by Catherine Donovan. I have not yet seen it, but I intend to. Now, this sounds interesting to me, and I hope I'm pronouncing the name right. Dimity, D-I-M-I-T-Y, McDowell. The author is going to be speaking on the book Run Like a Mother, How to Get Moving and Not Lose Your Family, Job, or Sanity. 5 o'clock tonight, Garcia Street Books on Garcia Street, 986-0151. It just sounds interesting. I don't know a thing about it, but I like the title. And for that matter, over at Collected Works at 6 o'clock tonight, Michael Gelb is going to be signing copies of Wine Drinking for Inspired Thinking, mm-hmm. on Cork Your Creative Juices at 6 o'clock. Now, does that sound like he's saying have a few drinks and then start writing?
I don't know. I haven't read the book.
Well, that's something I like to do, but I don't touch wine. 988-4262, Collected Works Bookstore.
And we've got guess what?
We have a ticket giveaway. Mary Lynn, take it away.
Ghost Ship Rodé, multimedia theater piece by singer-songwriter and artist Terry Allen, starring Joe Harvey Allen. This is this Friday evening at, today, I guess, at 8 p.m.
And so, yeah.
One pair of tickets after I stop talking. The first person who, when I say KSFR, when I answer the phone, says Terry Allen will get the tickets.
All right.
Nice. Okay. There's also a show tomorrow night.
428-1382.
Giving them, but it's 8 o'clock tonight. Tomorrow I was going to mention that. So good.
Yeah, and I had them on the air earlier this week, too, and they're fantastic.
They are. I've met them both and interviewed them both. And
it's a play about Antonine Artaud.
Right.
The great French sort of playwright. Crazed French surrealist playwright. And it's kind of, he was so crazy that he found a stick and he believed it belonged to St. Patrick. And he went back to Ireland to place it where it rightfully belonged. And sometimes he thought it belonged to Jesus Christ. He wasn't sure. And he created so much kerfuffle in Ireland that they deported him. And then on the ship, he was just a complete pain in the neck. And they tied him down. They straitjacketed him and tied him down to his cot. And this play is a fantasy of what his life might have been like in those 17 days.
A strange thing happened to me when I was in the first grade. Tippi Petine, who sat behind me, I've been thinking about her lately. You just said something that made me think of it. That was her name. I apologize if she's out there listening and I'm defaming her. She went like crazy in class and the teacher tied her to a chair.
Uh-oh.
This stuff happened in the 1960s educational system.
Yeah,
so Tippi Petine, wherever you are,
she probably needed it.
Speaking of education, brief note. Tomorrow, Carlos Gilbert Elementary grand reopening, entertainment, and a spaghetti western dinner. I like that. Not just spaghetti, but spaghetti western.
That means it's got chili in it.
Bow, bow. 2 p.m., ribbon cutting and ceremony at 4 p.m., dinner at 5:30 p.m., 300 Griffith Street. It's really inexpensive, and when I say that, it usually means less than 10 fingers of each finger is a dollar. We can't say prices on KSFR. 467-4700, Carlos Gilbert, welcome back. Welcome back. Wise Fool, New Mexico, and then I'll let you cut in. Puppet Workshops, noon to tomorrow.
Yeah.
Noon to 4 tomorrow. Wise Fool Studio on Agua Fria Street. No charge. Here's a phone number. 992-2588, and I'll say it one more time. Wise Fool, New Mexico. They're going to be doing puppet workshops from noon to 4.
What does
Saturdays
that mean, puppet
April.
Workshops? They're building big old puppets?
No, I imagine that they're going to get the puppets to, like, mow the lawn and, you know, shovel the snow and stuff like that. Maybe do a nice paint job on the studio, that sort of thing.
I need a puppet.
I'm your puppet.
Hey, this Saturday, this Sunday, April 11th, at the Center for Contemporary Arts, they're hosting a special showing of the documentary film Voices from Inside, Israelis Speak, and a short film also called Reframing the Issue. And producer Marjorie Wright and narrator of the film Hazel Khan, whom I spoke to on the radio the other day, will be introducing the movie and leading a question and answer afterwards. It's a fundraiser for the CCA, and also they're going to be tomorrow night, Saturday, from 7 to 10, they're going to be in Albuquerque at Woodward Hall on the UNM campus. And that's a terrific movie. It's funny, there's been so much attention to the lives of Palestinians in Santa Fe on my show. We've had three shows on that issue, and I'm not trying to be, you know, people to use the words one-sided. I'm not trying to be that way at all, but that's sort of, I think, the consciousness that's opening right now.
Here in town?
Here in town, maybe much further than here in town. I think it's probably going on across the whole country to varying degrees. But this movie on Sunday at the CCA, which you can find out the time and all that stuff at ccasantafe.org or call 982-1338.
That's right.
It's a very good, very thoughtful movie. So, anyway.
Good. CCA?
At the Center for Contemporary Arts here in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Along those lines, not in terms of the political aspects, but in terms of CCA, I believe they're running the 1948 Italian classic, The Bicycle Thief. It's a beautiful picture.
Nice.
Vittorio De Sica's picture. It's one of my favorites. CCA, I think it's just tonight at 8 o'clock.
And the tickets are gone, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Don't keep calling Mary Lynn.
Oh, somebody said Joe Harvey Allen?
No, they said Terry Allen.
Oh, the guy by sneaking through the side door. That's why I didn't get a ticket. While you were chatting on, I was
That's because you were here.
Well, I can still ring them up. Bells are ringing, ding-a-ling-a-ling. Mother. Mother, a South Korean picture by the same man who brought us The Host. Good, very good. Not great, but very good.
Excellent.
Regal de Vargas, my review's in the paper. Take a look. It's a great thriller. Keep you interested. Subtitles and all. Really, really nice picture. And the goofy date night, although it looks funny, with Tina Fey and Steve Carell opens today.
Tina Fey, you sort of can't go wrong with
no.
Tina Fey.
It's at Regal 14. The fact that it's under 90 minutes gives me hope, because that's a good comedy. It should be about 90 minutes, not 110.
And tonight at 5:30, here's another nice event. You can go over to see the art at the Visual Arts Gallery at the Santa Fe Community College and be a part of the awarding of the first scholarship of the Richard Bradford Memorial Creative Writing Scholarship. Michael McGarrity was on the show the other day talking about that, and it's a very wonderful thing, remembering Richard Bradford, who wrote Red Sky at Morning, and giving a scholarship to some lucky young writer.
Nice.
Night today at 5:30 to 7. That should be nice.
Swing Fever, if you want to do some jazz, in Encantada Resort and Spa out at 592 in Tsuki. They're going to have jazz hits of the 30s and 40s with Denise Perrier doing the vocals at 6:30 Tuesday. 946-5700. Sounds like a lot of fun. A 6:30 dance concert. That's neat on a Tuesday night if you want to go swinging. Swinging and singing on a Abba Dabba Honeymoon. Remember that song about the baboon and the chimp that got married?
No.
You know, it went something like Abba Dab 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 went with the monkey to the chimp. That was it. Abba Dab 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 said the chimp to the monk. All day long just chatting away. All night long just swinging away, just singing. Swinging in a honky-tonky way. You don't remember that?
No.
I just remembered it myself. It was in some movie. It was a goofy song. I don't know why the monkey and the chimp would get married and all that. But anyway, where were we?
Here in the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road.
Thank you. What time is it?
It is 8:53.
The Santa Fe Orchestra tonight is having an event, 6 p.m., Steuben Hall, Santa Fe Opera, open rehearsal reading of Ted Peeve's Kilmartin Glen and Robert McPhee's Symphony No. 6, Opus 15. They always have extra numbers on these things. No wonder people don't show up. It's classical music of some sort, I imagine. Head on up there, 7 miles north of Santa Fe, no charge. Call 466-4879. Brought to you by the Santa Fe Community Orchestra. Dun, 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 dun. Meanwhile, songwriters in the round include Celia, Maddie Sato, and Kristen Gray, 7 o'clock tonight at Mike's Music Exchange out in El Dorado. I'm hearing that's a pretty hopping place.
Excellent.
It's like a dance hall, nightclub, music venue, 466-2782. You got to pay to get in.
And on Thursday of next week, Carl Gartung, a poet, will be at Garcia Street Books at 5 in the afternoon, launching his new collection of poetry called Now That Memory Has Become So Important. And I believe he's going to be on the show here that morning.
Excellent. You want to hear some music tonight? Here we go. Amavi, Jerry Carthy, 7 o'clock, no cover. Three Faces of Jazz at El Mason, 8 o'clock, no cover. The Boxcar Bandits at Cowgirl Barbecue on Guadalupe Street, 9 p.m., a small cover charge. Savar, Cuban group that you and me both like, at the Pink Adobe, 6 o'clock, no cover. La Casa Sena, Best of Broadway, 6 o'clock, no cover. The Pleasure Pilots at La Fiesta tonight, 8 o'clock. These are all tonight, no cover. And finally, Bill Hearn Trio doing Honky Tonk at the 2nd Street Brewery. I assume it's the original 2nd Street Brewery. It is 6:30, no cover, because 2nd Street Brewery at the Railyard has Kenny Skywolf Trio doing Delta Blues at 4:30, no cover. Check out the Paso Tiempo for more music events and the calendar. It's pretty interesting. Plenty of stuff to do. There's going to be a lecture on Surrealist and Dada Cinema.
Nice.
I know. I like Dada Cinema, and I like Mama just as well. 6 o'clock Sunday. Actually, I prefer Mama.
I can't believe you just made that pun.
Like Ava Gardner in the 1960s. She was hot. Or that dame, what was her name? Anna Maria Alberghetti. She was pretty. Surrealist and Data Cinema, 6 o'clock Sunday. I'll make any kind of pun. I'm a punny guy. Santa Fe Complex on Albufeira Street. Suggested donation of a few bucks, 216-7562.
Sorry.
What did you have there?
That pun got caught in my throat.
That's pretty good. That's a Cinema Unbound lecture on Sunday. Go check it out. You say something. Go ahead. You. She's
Who,
left.
Me?
Oh, there. She's come back.
No.
I love your giggle. That's nice when I tickle you and you giggle. I'll do it again.
I think I've read all of my things. Let me see if there's anything going on in the salsa world.
Isn't Father Preto playing somewhere this weekend?
You tell me.
Well, I'm sure he is. I think that you should get over there and hear him play at the El Dorado tonight at 8:30. Small cover charge.
Is that happening?
That's what it says in the Pasta Temple calendar. We generally get it right, but again, we urge you to please make sure press releases are correct. Names, titles, places, phone numbers, prices, dates.
Yep, and please don't send attachments.
Well, I know, same with me.
When I get an email that the subject line is PR and inside there's nothing except an attachment, I delete it. I don't even read it.
A lot of attachments don't open. They're corrupt or they're just nonsense.
Yeah, or they're DocX, which I don't have.
And you know what? Economy is great with a press release. This is happening. Here's what it's about. If you want more information, call us. If you want photos, call us.
Yeah, who, what, when, where.
Right. Santa and Fe Men's Camarada, 7 o'clock Saturday, 4 o'clock Sunday, celebrates the changing of the seasons with about 20 new songs. Well, not new songs, but the songs from their repertoire. It's going to be at the First Presbyterian Church, which is on Grand Avenue downtown. You got to pay to get in. 466-3637. And do you like Patty Griffin?
I don't know Patty Griffin.
Oh, she's the singer-songwriter from Texas who's... Living with Ghosts about 10 years ago. She's in town, 7:30 Wednesday at the Lensic, 988-1234.
Excellent.
Briefly, Steve Terrell's column is excellent today for anybody who remembers the TAMI show, Tammy show. Great 1965 concert, which was quote-unquote shot in Santa Monica Civic Auditorium. Had the strangest melding of like old 1950s people like Chuck Berry, Leslie Gore, and then like up-and-coming people like James Brown. It's just been released on DVD, according to Steve's column, and I can't wait to see it. So in fact, I'm going to call Steve and try to get him to lend me it.
And by the way, Latin Thursdays at Corazon, just about every Thursday, DJ Patrick is spinning salsa, merengue, cumbia, bachata, reggaeton, and much, much more, dancing, drink specials, Thursday nights, you know. People show up, it keeps going.
Good. Marriage, plots. Comedy and Tragedy and Much Ado About Nothing and Othello. Man, try to put those two together on a double bill. Tonight, 8 o'clock, Great Hall, Peterson Student Center, St. John's, free. That should be interesting. Is it time to say goodbye?
It's almost time to say goodbye. It's 8:58. We've just got about a minute
Let's
left.
Let's just kiss.
So it's great having you on the air. Robert Knott is with the Santa Fe New Mexican, and... check out the Pasa Tiempo, which is the Friday arts magazine in that fine newspaper.
Thank you much.
He's with us just about every Friday speaking of the arts.
And next week, Rob DeWalt will join us again.
It's always great to have Rob DeWalt there. And Robert Knott, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for being here. Come back next Friday on my show.
I will be delighted to join you. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. I'm Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you have any technical difficulties, I just got an email from somebody who said she couldn't download one of the shows. Please let me know by writing to radiocafe@ksfr.org, because sometimes there's a mistake, often my mistake, in just getting something wrong in the upload or whatever. So if there's any problems at all, please let me know. Or if you have any questions or you just want to say hi or whatever.
Hello.
RadioCafe@ksfr.org. Thanks to the fabulous Mary Lynn LeBlanc for engineering today.
Thank you, Mary Lynn.
Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Jazz a la Carta with Ricardo Perez and Helga Ancona in the Central Brazilian Hour, which is sandwiched between the Latin Hour and the Jazz Hour. So
what
she's
about
there
the midnight
from
hour?
10 to 11. Well, that's more your domain.
I should have a show called The Midnight Hour with Robert Knott.
You should.
I'll take callers.
What would you do to those callers?
Take them. If they were all women, particularly.
Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company.
Well, naturally. Why else would we
and
be here?
Monday, Anyway, Monday we're going to be talking about the next week in Albuquerque. There's this amazing biofuels conference coming up. And so on Monday we're going to be talking to four people involved in that event. Economists, business people, research scientists, all kinds of great people talking about making things like jet fuel from algae.
Bye-bye.
Bye.